All right. Good morning, everybody. I'm Cathy Roma from the University of Sussex. I'm presenting the XMM Cluster Survey first data release on behalf of myself, Nicola Mertens, and Ed Lloyd-Davis. Ed's my postdoc, and Nicola's my former student, currently looking for a postdoc. And this is on behalf of the whole of the XCS collaboration. I'm just going to give you the bottom line while you're looking at some pictures, in case you don't want to concentrate for the full 15 minutes. The XCS has found about 3,500 cluster candidates. Those are extended X-ray sources in the XMM archive. They're serendipitous sources. We've removed all the targets when we present that number. And we're releasing, it's always 2 weeks away, but I think it really is 2 weeks away now, 505 of them, all of which have got optical counterparts that are clear. So they're the sort of clusters that you can go away and play with without having to worry about them not actually being clusters. So these are some examples where the optical counterparts have come from the Sloan Digitized Survey 7th data release. The blue contours are the XMM data. These range in redshifts from the top left at 0.08 down to the bottom right of 0.48. If you prefer them a little bit more distant, this is optical follow-up data that we've done ourselves at the two NOAO 4-meter telescopes. We had a 4-year campaign there. Well, only 40 nights, but over 4 years. And these range in redshifts from 0.2 up to 0.9. All of these 16 are new to the literature, though they have not been cataloged before. Overall, of the 505 that we're presenting, just over half are new to the literature. Because of the way we've done the optical follow-up, many of them come from MaxBCG, et cetera. Just because they're new to literature doesn't necessarily mean that they have been cataloged as X-ray sources before. If you're interested in, particularly in high redshift, we have 30 in this data release at redshifts greater than 0.8. A lot of those redshifts are coming from the literature, for example, from sort of work that Piero's been talking about today. And of those, only 5 are going to be new to the literature. So they are coming from a homogeneous selection, but many of them you will have seen before. If you want to play with these clusters, they'll all be available from this website. Just a long, boring list of numbers and arrays and decks. For each one, you'll be able to get X-ray and optical data. And the page scrolls down. I couldn't capture the whole thing. And shows the full XMM field of view where the cluster lies, the position of it. It's not available yet, in case you're all trying to do it right now. The web page is available. And we promise as soon as the page is on AstroPH, the website will be live. Overview of the rest of the talk. Those of you who now just want to switch off, you can. I'm going to talk about the development of this data release. It really has been horrible and glorious. I was thinking last night when I was writing this talk, this is the third time I've done an X-ray cluster survey. And in the meantime, I've had 2 kids. And I have to think, I should have just had more kids. I'll be presenting some of the properties of the sample. And really don't have much time to go into the applications. So I'll just touch on 2 of them. But we are working on quite a lot of different science. But mostly, we need other people to work on these clusters, because there's far more that can be done than are people in our, that we have personnel to do it. So what does the XMM archive look like? Well, this is a distribution of all the XMM pointings. Areas within the red we'd exclude from a cluster survey, because they're either in the Magellanic Clouds or in the plane. But we do analyze all the data. The stuff highlighted in green will be in the DES footprint. So I'm lucky enough to be part of the DES collaboration. So these are the observations that we'll be able to get photometric redshifts for when the DES data become available. And including overlaps, and we do include our overlaps when we coat our areas, that's about 400 square degrees of area for cluster searching. So that's removing the stuff in the plane. How do we develop DR1? Well, ignoring all of that pain for 10 years, we take a raw XMM image like this one. We find all the sources, and we figure out statistically which ones are extended. The green ones are extended. The red ones are point sources. The purple in between can't make their mind up. And focusing on the one highlighted in bold, this is just one I pulled off our website yesterday. This is a 3x3 arc minute zoom in onto the X-ray photons, and this is the corresponding optical image. It is important when you are finding extended sources with XMM to do some eyeball work. I don't like eyeball work, but it is important because it is automatic process, you do sometimes bring in blends, and I'll show us example of that. So how do we do this eyeball program? It's something very similar to Galaxy Zoo. We have about 23 of us doing it. And we take imaging from either DL7, SDSS, Stripe 82, or our own imaging campaign from NOIO. And where those surveys don't overlap with clusters that we've redetected that happen to have literature redshifts, we actually go to the papers and actually individually check them. And thank you to all of those of you who wrote down how many redshifts you had, or perhaps put an image in. There were quite a lot of clusters that we redetected with redshifts that are not in this sample, because we couldn't hand on heart say that we had optically identified them ourselves. So these are examples of the sort of things that we found where XCS didn't find clusters. Those who know anything about XCS will know that on the right, you're seeing the bow tie point spread function that happens at the very edge of the field of view. But now that we've seen these examples, it's possible to take those out of, you know, another time that we produce a cluster candidate list. And the blends, for example, here, you can see the green ellipses overlapped two obvious point sources. And again, it's possible for us to add another filter so those wouldn't come into a following cut on the XMM archive. Once we've identified the clusters, we also have to measure redshifts and then measure temperatures and luminosities. The redshift work that we're presenting in this paper includes 139 spectroscopic redshifts, some of those from the literature, some from the archive, some from our own work, and more than 300 photometric redshifts using the CMR technique. I had all of this as separate slides, and I thought we'd run out of time. So this is just a very summary plot of information that's all in detail in the Ed Lloyd Davis paper that shows that when you're measuring temperatures for clusters in the archive from the discovery data, it's okay to do it with pipelines. So that's the top red plot that is comparing our measurement with published measurements. Second point is that you can do that when it's off-axis. So we have examples of clusters that detected far off-axis and on-axis. We've made sure that those temperatures actually match. There's no biases there. We've taken very high-count clusters in this sense and then resampled them to make them look like low signal-to-noise clusters. And we found that although the temperature errors go up, the actual mean temperature isn't biased. So that's good. And we've also done something similar with the luminosity pipelines as well. So the properties of the sample are as follows. This is the number of clusters versus redshift. The blue are new to the literature. That's about the half of the 505 I told you about that have not been published before. The green are the full sample. The temperature distribution is as follows. You'll see that just about half of them are probably more like groups rather than clusters. We've decided not to change our name to the XGS, but at one point we thought we might have to. Where are these clusters? Where are these clusters distributed on the sky? You'll see they're concentrated in that North Ecliptic region because a lot of the follow-up, both the optical IDs and the redshifts, has come from the Sloan in one way or the other, or from Stripe 82. You should see a nice little concentration along the equator there. But you'll see that there's very few, for example, in the DES region, whereas we had an awful lot of observations in the DES region. So there's clearly many, many more temperatures and redshifts that we can get out of the XMM archive. Just to make a comparison with, you know, with the sorts of data releases that have come out with temperatures before, these are just a few examples of samples. We've plotted up the number of clusters versus redshift. And when you put XCS on, then because we have many more clusters, obviously, it looks like we have a much bigger sample. That's pretty clear. And when you're looking at temperature, the situation's slightly different, because although we have many more clusters, we do have fewer at the very high redshift end. And that's to be expected. We don't have the same survey volume as something like the MAC survey, because we've only got 400 square degrees. We don't have the whole sky. But still, I think it should be a fairly representative sample. And if any of you are interested in high redshift groups, we've got loads of them. Those of you who know anything about X-ray temperatures know that it's not the number that matters, it's the errors. And these, again, taken from those papers that published one sigma errors on the temperatures. We do have quite a lot of temperature errors greater than 20%, but we also have quite a lot that are less. We do pretty respectively in comparison to published work. And when I was watching Tom's talk yesterday, I realised I hadn't put five flukes on there, so Ed sent me that plot literally 5 minutes before Pierre started talking. So if there's any other plot, any other surveys you'd like me to put on, that's no problem at all, I'll do so. So applications of the DR1 sample, obviously there's an awful lot of clusters, and there's lots of things you can do with them. And I'm just going to show you two examples today. One is the preliminary luminosity temperature relation, and the other one is some work on fossil groups. The luminosity temperature relationship is being done by myself and Ed Lloyd Davis. The fossil groups is done by Chris Miller and Craig Harrison at Michigan. But we are obviously working on lots of different other projects, including optical scaling relations. Nicola's working on that. Pedro Viana's got a paper almost finished on Planck overlap between our DR1 sample and what you'd expect to detect with Planck. And Martin Salen has been continuing the work that was published in his paper from 2010 on cosmology forecasting for XCS. So this is the LT relation. It has not been corrected for the selection function, as Florian Paco showed in his paper. It's very important to do so. This also has not been corrected for evolution. If you break that down into not redshift bins, but age bins, so it's color-coded in look-back time of two bins of 2 giga-year, you can actually see that different redshifts were sampling different temperatures. And so all of those sorts of selection effects need to be folded in before we make a measurement of the luminosity temperature relation, including the evolution. But we have lots of objects. In terms of the fossil group work, this was a very nice application of XCS in the sense that Chris Miller, who's an expert on SDSS, and Craig Harrison went in and searched all of the clusters that we had to see, cluster candidates that we had, to see how many of them had the signature of a BCG that was more than 2 magnitudes brighter than the next brightest galaxy. And they came up with a number of candidates, and there's 14 in this sample, which is quite large for a fossil group sample. And the reason I wanted to show it today is because although XCS is a serendipitous cluster catalog, all of our pipelines work just as well on AXIS. So in fact, we can analyze all the targets as well. In fact, we have done. And so the bottom line of their work is their most important discovery is that they found that the fossil group BCGs are the most massive stellar systems in the universe. This is a quote directly from Craig's email last night. And that suggests they formed the bulk of their mass at very early epochs and grew via accretion. They also found, because they did it in this blind way, without actually having the luminosities before they did it, they found fossil clusters. So they've actually found examples like this, as Abel 963, which is a very bright cluster, but it still has all the properties in terms of the optical side of things of a fossil group. So coming to conclusions, the biggest one is there are lots and lots of clusters in the XMR archive. We're going to present to the community 505 of those in the next few weeks, and 401 of them will have temperature information. Lots of science applications, only managed to mention 2 of them so far. And we'd absolutely love it if you use those clusters. They really, you know, it's worked so hard, we would really appreciate it if you use our work. And just some final notes, if you want more details about the properties of the sample and the selection of the sample, it's in Lloyd Davis et al. And Merton's once it's submitted, and obviously it'll be on the website as well. And if you like the data analysis they've done, then they're both on the job market, and I'm sure they'd appreciate a job. And what I haven't mentioned today is selection functions, and there's a lot of cosmologists in the room, and I'm sure you want to know, but we have always folded selection functions into what we do in XCS. The selection functions won't be part of the first data release, but it's not something that we've been ignoring. And as of a couple of days ago, Chris Collins, one of my XCS collaborators, has managed to get funding for a scaling relations meeting. It's a 1-day meeting in Liverpool on June the 24th. And if you're in Europe, especially for the DES meeting, which is the following Monday, please come along. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be announcing that through as many email exposures as we can. And I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about the ones you're not releasing now. Are there any that don't have optical clusters there, other than the fact that you just haven't confirmed it yet, where you've got good evidence that there's nothing to see there, but you still have a diffuse X-ray source?
Well, it's very hard for us to do that in a you know, a consistent way across the whole catalogue. But what we do do is we eyeball things. If we can't find them in SDSS or in our deeper work, either from NOAO or from Stripe 82, we flag them as high redshift candidates, and that's the sort of thing that Adam Stanford likes to do, and that's how we found our highest redshift candidate. We've also been using the UKIDS data exclusively, and we've just started using the Vista data, so we're finding a lot of things in that next redshift range up by trying to use some infrared data. In terms of have we found anything that is an X-ray cluster that doesn't have any optical stuff at all, I can't say that we've ever looked so deep that we would have been able to say that. So now I would say no.
Just wondering whether you have a sky coverage to show in the sky coverage curve area as a function of flux?
Sky coverage is a function of flux, no, but we can make that. What have we got in the paper? We've got sky coverage as a function of exposure time, but no, we haven't got that plot, so yeah, it's a good one to make.